This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Rechte Neckfahne mit dem linken Fuß. Bringt den Ball auf den zweiten Pfosten. Tesche! Tor! 1:0 für den VfL Bochum.
Da draußen ist der Ball frei. Und jetzt ist er drin. Jetzt ist er drin. Und hier ist Botzen, macht das Tor.
Der zählt das 2:2. Drist ist wieder da. Röser ist da.
Für Rausch, der setzt an zur Flanke. Da kommt der Ball. Tor, 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 Tor.
We welcome you to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast, your home for the best league in the world. I'm your host, Matthew Karagic. It's a pleasure to have your company once again. We are recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, European time. It is exactly 11 p.m. here in Adelaide, Australia. But when you have a league like this, time can wait. And let's get to all the action. Matchday 12 is the matchday that we'll be reviewing first, and then we'll have a look ahead to matchday 13. And of course, your topic questions. We have six important questions that myself and my wonderful guest will digress. He is the head of the English press section of Bochum. It is the one and only Gabriel Radis. Gabriel, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Hi, lovely to be here.
It is our pleasure. And without further ado, we will get on to the action from matchday 12, which starts in Bielefeld as Arminia Bielefeld hosted Holstein Kiel. It was a 2-1 win for the hosts, a big win for them. Goals from Fabian Klose and Andreas Vogelsammer. From the host Emmanuel Ioa getting on the score sheet for De Storker. What it means is that Bielefeld join equal top with Hamburg, who we'll talk about in a moment. A crucial home win, Gabriel, and one that they were made to earn.
Yeah, I think it was a tough win, particularly considering that Kiel had been on such a rich vein of form, been on playing so well of late. I mean, they'd beaten Stuttgart and Bochum 2-1 last week. And then I think, yeah, it was a particularly important week for Bielefeld. I think a couple of hours before the game, they had a big anti-racism protest. And so it was quite an emotional day. So it was important that the club got the win. And obviously huge for them in terms of joining Hamburg up at the top, only second on an inferior goal difference. So, yeah. It's a good game.
Yeah, and we spoke, as mentioned in the intro, Fabian Klose and Andreas Vogelsammer, really the key figureheads in this one. They both got on the score sheet. They've now combined for 15 of the 24 goals that Bielefeld have amounted so far this season. It does help, certainly, to have, Gabriel, it certainly helps to have two strikers who can literally just find the back of the net with relative ease.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's really important for Bielefeld. I think almost might be the chink in their armour. With Klose and Vogelsammer combining to, as you said, 63% of all the goals that Bielefeld have scored in the league, it means that if one of them gets injured, or even both, they might be short for goals. But I mean, at the moment, it's working perfectly. They're combining really well. An excellent goal from Vogelsammer as well. And, you know, against a resilient Kiel side who were looking to get three wins on the bounce, they've really, Bielefeld have done well to come away with 3 points.
That they have. They do have Sven Schiplock, underrated football god, in the waiting if that ever comes about. We'll move on to the Britta Arena in Wiesbaden as Vejen hosted Hamburg. This game ended a goal apiece. David Kinsombi fortuitously putting the opener. He cleaned up the pieces after Lukas Vatkoviak spilled the beans to give Hamburg a 1-0 lead. Then Wiesbaden were reduced to 10 men when Stefan Aigner trampled on Tim Leibold, the VAR overturning a yellow card. He was sent off. But it would be an ex-Hyersvall striker, Torlis Knoll, who got the game-tying goal in stoppage time to give Wiesbaden a share of the points. an interesting game this was for a number of reasons, but one that Hamburg will feel that they let slip away.
Yeah, I think it's going to be incredibly frustrating for Hauerswald, particularly when they were driving back, I'm sure, fuming at the fact that they were a mere few seconds away from securing a deserved victory. I mean, they combined for 20 shots in the whole game, 70% possession compared to Wiesbaden's 9 shots. And Wiesbaden didn't really offer too much. They were quite, I mean, to be fair, they've been playing a lot better of late. I think everyone sort of wrote them off after the first 5 or 6 games of the season, particularly when they got battered at home 5-0 by Regensburg. But they've really come into their own of late, and as a sort of underdog, they moved up into, well, temporarily into the relegation playoff position, and have picked up some points. But yeah, I think Hamburg will be really kicking themselves at not having secured 3 points here.
Absolutely, and there was some interesting things that came out of this game. From a Wiesbaden perspective, the lack of goalkeeper depth that they had going through, Heinz Lindner was out, and of course Jan-Christoph Bartels, the Köln loanee. It got so bad that the goalkeeper coach, Marjan Petkovic, was the reserve goalkeeper, so had Lukas Vodkoviak gone down injured, we would have seen, I can't remember the last time a goalkeeping coach had played between the sticks, but that would have made for a very interesting premise and storyline. But good point for Wiesbaden. They continue. It's 5 games unbeaten for them.
I agree. I mean, it was a really interesting weekend for goalkeepers in general, I think. Sorry to cut you off there.
No, you're okay.
I can't remember the last time that a goalkeeping coach was on the bench. I think the last one that springs to mind is an FA Cup fixture in England for Sutton United against Arsenal. Yes, really, really quite a bizarre situation. Almost quite funny that even though Vatkovyak was at fault for the Hauerswald goal, he was up in the box for the Wiesbaden equaliser. And he almost, I guess, an extra body is going to put the Hauerswald defenders off. So I guess you can kind of maybe say that he atoned for his sins.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll move on from Wiesbaden and we'll head to Stuttgart as they hosted Dynamo Dresden. Both sides entering on losing records in terms of their past 5 games. Dynamo winless in their previous 4. Stuttgart, 3 consecutive losses on the bounce, but they did atone for their sins at home. A 3-1 win for them. They were fortuitous with the opening goal 3 minutes in from Dresden defender Brian Hamalainen putting into his own net. Santiago Ascasibar made it 2. Musa Kone made it interesting at 2-1, but then Silas with his second goal in as many games to give Stuttgart a much-needed win, and it keeps them in touching distance with Hamburg and Bielefeld. But the big news out of this one really is at the bottom. We look at Dresden, Gabriel, and it's now 5 consecutive defeats. It's fair to say that the heat is, well, the kitchen is getting a lot hotter for Christian Fiel.
Yeah, they're in some serious trouble, I think. After 5 successive defeats, he's really looking at potentially getting the sack, unfortunately. Dresden, known for being a really, traditional, historically great club, well-supported club. I mean, they brought down 5,000 fans, down 5,000 fans to Stuttgart, having taken 35,000 to their Pokal game against Hertha earlier last week. They're really well-supported, an excellent fan base, excellent club, but rock bottom at the moment. I think quite a few points off the quite a few points adrift is not where they anticipated they would be. I think 4 points it would take them to get out of the relegation places. It's not looking good. And it was a much needed win for VfB Stuttgart. Through 3 humbling losses after had kind of set them significantly back. I mean, they were 5 points, or I think are they now 5 points behind the leaders? It was or at least they were until they played Dynamo. So it's they needed that victory, and so that's very helpful for them. Yeah.
Well, they're only 2 points behind now, Bielefeld and Hamburg. Yep. So only The Hamburg and Bielefeld, 7 wins, 4 draws, 1 loss. Whereas Stuttgart, 7 wins, 2 draws, 3 defeats. So it is very nicely poised at the top of the standings. Big win for them, as we ever mentioned, Stuttgart needing that win, taking the confidence from their cup win in Hamburg in midweek. So maybe they'll end into the international break on a win. We'll wait and see. We'll talk about that later on. We'll take our first break, and on the other side, we head to the Millantor when St. Pauli hosts Karlsruhe. St. Pauli and Karlsruhe is the first game in our Group 2 helpings. They played a 2-2 draw, and this game had plenty in it in terms of drama and pretty much anything you'd expect from a pretty typical Zweite Bundesliga fixture. 2 penalties for St. Pauli put them 2-0 up through Dimitrios Diamantakos, and then they completely fell apart. Mark Lawrence getting a goal on 85 minutes, and then Marvin Poirier's equaliser in stoppage time, giving Karlsruhe a much deserved point. It is now their 6th consecutive draw. That is some stat. It keeps them in mid-table. St. Pauli, another team that will look at the end of the match day, Gabriel, of what could have been.
Yeah, I think St. Pauli could have really done with victory there. Would have really taken them up the table, up towards Regensburg in 7th. But they'll have to settle for a draw. I mean, 2-0 up after 85 minutes, and you really think that you're going to secure the victory, particularly with a sold out, nearly 30,000 people there at St. Pauli at the Millantor, sold out stadium. You'd kind of think that they've managed to pull over the line. But I mean, Karlsruhe's escaping act continues. It's the 4th game now in a row, including the Pokal, that they've managed to either secure an equaliser or a winner past the 85th minute. So, I mean, against VfL, they did it. They scored a 92nd-minute equaliser. Darmstadt in the Pokal, they scored a winner late on. And St. Pauli now here, Hanover as well, a 96th-minute equaliser, even after they conceded in the 94th minute. So, I mean, they're doing it right, but I mean, for them it's quite worrying that they keep having to dig out draws from late in the game.
Well, they certainly have the clutch gene, as anyone who would watch NBA would acknowledge that they come up trumps late in the game. I come back to a particular opportunity for St. Pauli if Ryo Miichi buries that opportunity, goes 3-0, game's probably done and dusted. They leave the door ajar, and they were duly punished from that. We'll move on to Auer as they hosted Heidenheim. This game ended a goal apiece. An excellent goal from Philipp Riese opening the scoring for the hosts. And it was another late goal. Stefan Schimmer, the substitute, getting an equaliser for Frank Schmidt's side. It was a fairly even game, all told, and I think both sides would be satisfied with a point each.
Yeah, I think, I mean, as you called it in last week's episode, I think you said that it was going to be a close match, not many goals, that it proved to be that. But yeah, I think both clubs are pretty happy with where they are. 4th now, Aue, and 6th, Heidenheim, only dropping down one place. So yeah, I think they'll, I mean, if you given them that result of, you know, sort of 12 games into the season before the season, then I think they take that, bite your hand off for it. So yeah, I think all things considered, they're pretty happy. And Manil as well was excellent in goal. So yeah, I think I'm really impressed with both sides, really.
Yeah, Manil in particular has had a fantastic season. All told, he's probably in the top 3 best shot stoppers this season. Up there with Yohoya Fernandez's, your Tagers, Riemann would be in the mix as well. Riemann's had some really good performances, but we'll get onto him later on because
I'm glad you said Riemann.
Well, I mean, he's had some great performances, but so has Manil. Manil was very good in this game, and yep, all told, not much to really speak about in this one. Good result for both sides. They'll move on to the next one. And so will we, as we go to Fürth when they hosted Darmstadt. A 3-1 win for De Kleeblatt. 2 goals for Branimir Hürgürtse, although one of them was, well, a gift. Emmanuel Horn's own goal gave them the third. Victor Paulsen got a consolation, but it was only that. It means that Greuther Fürth remain in the top six. But, yeah, costly errors really the order of the day here. And as a result, it cost Darmstadt here.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if it wasn't for the past two victories for Darmstadt, I would be really worried for Dimi Bramatsis, who's an ex-Bochumer, who, I mean, Darmstadt really have looked quite poor at times this season. And yeah, despite the consolation goal, weren't really in this game. Greuther Fürth had control from the off, really, and sort of secured it in that sort of middle third of the game. And yeah, I mean they did win their last two games aside from this game, obviously. But I still think they're in trouble.
Yeah, they're not out of the woods yet. I know those two wins certainly eased the pressure, but they have to be cautious. Teams below them had good weekends.
And the fixtures as well.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it doesn't get easier for Darmstadt. You know, they host Jan Regensburg, a team that we'll talk about in the next section. Team that can score goals. They can score with Flurry. So yeah, Darmstadt have all sorts of, have their biggest problem coming into the season, and we've lamented this quite a few times on the podcast, is their lack of scoring power. And when you saw the team sheet on Saturday for this game, it was a real concern. You didn't really feel confident that they would have the scoring punch, and as a result, it was their defensive midfielder who once again chimed in with the goal. We'll take our final break in this section of the podcast, and on the other side, we'll talk about last night's game. At the time of recording this, at the Ruhrstadion, it was Bochum and Nürnberg. The Ruhrstadion placed host to our Monday night fixture as Bochum hosted Nürnberg. A game that was pivotal for both sides. Either side could make a genuine case for a need of 3 points. And it was the hosts, Bochum, who took those 3 points back to the bank with them. 3-1 victors over Der Club. Danilo Suarez scored the opening goal. An excellent bit of grit and determination and tight play. Getting the opener. Simon Lorenz profiting from a goalkeeping error by fifth choice goalkeeper Benedikt Willert. Manuel Winsheimer getting on the score sheet. Asker Sorensen made things interesting and almost aided my 3-3 cause, as mentioned in the previous podcast. But it wasn't to be. The Ruhr side taking a well-deserved victory. Gabriel, you were at this game. Tell us what your views were on it. And we'll focus a little bit on Bochum for the first part of this. How big of a win it was for them.
Yeah, I think it was massive. The general sense around the club after the game was just relief, really. To go so long, so far into a season without getting a home win was really tough for everyone involved. So, yeah, I mean, getting the three first half goals was amazing in terms of just giving us that cushion, because even though we were 3-1 up, I don't think anyone believed that we were actually going to win, even with 5 minutes to go. So we still have some defensive frailties that we need to sort out. And I think January is coming soon, and we're definitely going to have to make use of the market. But it was a really good win with three first time scorers scoring, which is quite a nice little thing. That Danilo, Simon Lorenz, and Winsheimer haven't scored for Bochum this season, and they all scored today, yesterday. And I think a lot of sympathy for Willert in goal for Nürnberg. Only told 4 hours beforehand that he was going to be playing after the original first choice, although was fourth choice at the very start of the season. Luxa came down with fever on the bus on the way to the game. So,
yeah, that's not a particularly ideal situation for Nürnberg. It has once again thrown a cast over Demir Kanadi's tenure at the club. The club have kind of hidden all talks about his future, and it makes the next game that they play against Arminia Bielefeld, which we'll talk about in the next segment, really pivotal for them. But you know, a lot has been made about Nürnberg's style of play, and it's quite defensive. against the Bochum side that really had nothing to lose and plenty to gain. What was your impression on the way that they played? And do you think that they are a team that lacks sort of confidence or just sort of direction?
Nuremberg is an interesting one because, I mean, they've got 1-8, 2 points in their last 4 games. They've conceded the most goals at this stage of the season than they have ever have, 22 goals. So it's not ideal. And I think there was a distinct lack of direction in the first half. I mean, Kanadi had to make 2 changes at halftime and made his 3rd substitution really early on in the second half as well, because it just really wasn't good enough. And for such a well-supported club, packed out away end, for a club that really should be doing a lot better, who had high hopes of getting, you know, bouncing back, it's worrying for them. I think they're hovering on 14 points now. I think, you know, with results going against them, particularly when they're playing Bielefeld, I think, yeah, Kanadi again looks a little bit like a dead man walking. Particularly in the press conference, he didn't really have much to say, if I'm honest. He just lamented the fact that his team weren't good enough, didn't perform, which is sad, really.
Yeah, there is a chance that at the end of the match day, they could end up in that bottom 4-5 region. I mean, you look at the table as it stands, and 16 upwards to 5th, only 6 points. If you want to even take it a little bit further, 8 to 16 is 3 points. So it is tight in the mid to lower part of the table. But at that shows how important it was for Bochum to get the win. And a good win it was for them. We'll move on from Bochum and Nuremberg, and we'll head to Regensburg when they hosted Osnabrück. And this game had plenty of goals in it. 3-3 it ended. Jan-Marc Schneider with an excellent bicycle kick to open the scorings. Marco Grüttner made it 2-0 for the host heading into the break. Marcos Alvarez getting a goal back. But then Chima Okorigi with an excellent goal, candidate for goal of the season. His run from left back all the way to the penalty area and to score was quite a sight to behold. And when it seemed like Jan Regensburg were going to win after Jan, well, they could have gone 4-1 up when Jan-Marc Schneider hit the post, it all fell apart. And it was Moritz Heyer, an unlikely goal scorer. He scored the last 2 goals to give Osnabrück a share of the spoils. We've spoken about a few teams that it could have been so much different. And you can't help but feel that Jan Regensburg feels in this category.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to them, they're on a decent run of form. 2 wins in the past 5 games, but that's also a couple of draws in there as well. So it's not horrific for them to have not closed this out, but they really should have. I mean, they should have been 4 up and well and away, particularly considering Osnabrück. I mean, we recently spoke about Darmstadt being goal shy. I mean, Osnabrück hadn't scored since the 22nd of September. And they're coming into this game, and they score 3 goals. So it wasn't ideal. But then again, Regensburg have this sort of perfectly symmetrical 4-4-4 overall summary of their season: 4 wins, 4 draws, and 4 losses. So I think they'll be pretty pleased with the 7th position that they are in at the moment, getting towards about a third of the way into the season.
Absolutely. I mean, what's been the saving grace with Osnabrück this season has been their defence prior to the game. They'd only given up 9 goals, which was the league's best defence. And that's incredible to think when you look at a team that was sitting in the lower part of mid-table. But they'll take the point. You know, every point is vital, especially on the road. They're a much better team at home. So they'll look to try and transmit that in their next game, which will be a tough one against Stuttgart. Our last game of match day 12 was in Hanover. They hosted Sandhausen. This game ended a goal apiece, but it wasn't without controversy, which we'll touch on in a moment. Hendrik Vinant opened the scoring for the hosts, but they couldn't hold on 62 minutes in. Aziz Buhaduz getting the equalising goal, but it could have been a game-winning goal. Gabriel, VAR, very much involved in this game. May have unfairly chalked off a goal for Sandhausen.
Yeah, I mean, I think, in all honesty, Hanover were lucky to get away with a point at home. Really quite sad, actually, the state of play in Hanover. I mean, a 49,000 capacity stadium and only 20,000 fans there. Look pretty empty, and just really not didn't play particularly well. Pretty uninteresting. I'm quite sad that I chose to watch that game as opposed to the Regensburg Osnabrück. But with regards to the VAR decision, Sandhausen had a goal chalked off when Tirpitz crossed the ball in. It was finished in the centre, but the assistant referee gave an offside. But when they went to VAR, it looked, for all intents and purposes, that Tirpitz may well have been onside, but the VAR camera didn't have Tirpitz in view, so they couldn't overrule the decision because he wasn't in picture. So they had to go with the original decision of onside, of offside. Sorry. So Sandhausen had that goal chalked off. They did eventually score through Buadus. Yes, I mean, Hannover really poor. They sacked their manager in response to the result, basically, and in response to a really poor set of results of late.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, we spoke about it on our special podcast episode with the wonderful Jonathan Harding, and he mentioned that it was a pretty lazy appointment, all things told. And truth be told, I think most of us were in agreement that it was a bit of a weird situation. And as a result, they've played very uninspiring football. They're the only team in the Zweite Bundesliga yet to win at home this season, which seems almost incomprehensible when you look at the talent they've got compared to the team they played in Sandhausen. They have been truly abysmal. I do feel sorry for their fans in many ways. It's been a very toxic environment the last 18 months with what's been going down off the pitch, and it seems that it's really transmitted on the pitch as well. The Slomka axing, they haven't... it'll be interesting to see who takes charge for their game on the weekend. Yeah, and I've just got word, just before we go to our halftime break, concerning Nürnberg. This is rare we get live news. Demir Kanadi has been sacked. He's gone.
Has it? Wow.
Yep. He's been relieved of his duties and taking charge of managerial duties. This is a fan favourite for Nürnberg fans. It's Marek Mintal will be taking the reins. So that's an interesting one. So, I mean, I guess before we get to our break, some immediate reaction. Gabriel, what's your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of looked pretty obvious, really, after the result last night. I felt bad for him. I mean, it's his first foray, really, into German football, having done really well in Austrian football and in Greece as well. But, yeah, I think it's unfortunate, but really, I mean, he's only been in since the summer. He came in to get them promoted, and they're hovering, and they're not playing well, and there just didn't seem to be any fight. It was the real issue, because Bochum had to have defensive frailties. I think that's the major issue. We keep conceding goals and mentally aren't particularly strong. So they really should have capitalised on Bochum's frailties. But yeah, I'm not surprised, if I'm honest. I feel bad for the guy, obviously, but it's a tough world in football, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to that break. It's halftime in our podcast, and on the other side, ironically, our opening match day 13 game will be Nürnberg and Arminia Bielefeld.
Hey, I'm Zach.
And I'm Kevin.
And we're the hosts of the Rinkside Podcast.
We were annoyed by the lack of hockey coverage on local sports radio and decided that we were stupid enough to try and provide some ourselves.
We have what we call the Rinkside Guarantee. We guarantee that the podcast you're currently listening to is better than ours. We are literally just two halves of one whole idiot trying to fumble through covering the Detroit Red Wings, the National Hockey League, and hockey in general.
Check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Ringside Pod, and subscribe to us on all your favorite podcast providers.
Every time you listen to our podcast, it brings us one step closer to our ultimate business goal of purchasing the Arizona Coyotes and then moving them to Detroit. What? Now, back to your regularly scheduled programming, or just another commercial. We aren't the ones who make those choices.
Match day 13 is nearly upon us, and without further ado, we'll get into previewing all the action before the international break. Yes, the dregs of the international break is nearly upon us, but we still get one good week of proper football to enjoy. And as we mentioned prior to our break, Nürnberg and Arminia Bielefeld will kick us off on the Sunday time slot This is a big game. They've met on 36 previous occasions, 15 wins for Nürnberg, 14 for Arminia Bielefeld, 7 draws. They last met in the 2017-18 Zweite Bundesliga season. That was at the Alm. It was a 1-0 win for Bielefeld. In fact, Bielefeld have won the previous two meetings, but in the previous five, 3 wins going to the club. Gabriel, this is a big game for Nürnberg. In particular, Marek Mintal, as we mentioned before, is going to be the caretaker for this game. It's fair to say it's not a particularly easy game for him to be brought in.
Yeah, I think it's obviously going to be tough. And I reckon that he's not going to be judged on the result of this game. That's for sure. However, Nürnberg do need to get a positive result. I think it's just not, they haven't been good enough just in terms of performance. 1 win in the past 6. And they're conceding far too many goals. I think even if they come out with a 1-0 loss, then they'll take a good performance, that is, then they'll take a lot of pride from that and move on to an easier opponent. But it's a home game. They should all turn up. It's got a great fan base. I think they should be hoping for, you know, at least a point from this game. Yeah.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Of course, Bielefeld have the brilliant tandem up front, but it's been, you know, some of their defense has been pretty solid with Nielsen and Pieper, you know, who have really shouldered the responsibilities. Of course, Prieto in midfield, who's been, well, he literally just covers every blade of grass. They've really figured it out in terms of personnel and what they want to achieve. I think Bielefeld will win this game. I would be not at all surprised if Fabian Klose and Vogelsammer get on the score sheet. 8 and 7 goals respectively. It is a tough game for Mintal to come into, but they need to kind of simplify their game. They need to be a little bit more attacking. Under Canardi, they were very defensive, but they weren't very good defensively. So it will be interesting to see how that game pans out. We'll move to Kiel as they host Hamburg on Saturday. They've met on 8 previous occasions, 3 wins for Kiel, Hamburg 4 wins and a draw. Hamburg have undefeated in their previous 5 league games with 3 draws and 2 wins. Kiel 3 wins and 2 defeats. The last time they met at the Holstein Stadion, it was a 3-1 win for Kiel. In fact, Kiel won both fixtures last season. And you have to go all the way back to 2018. Sorry, 2008, excuse me. For the last time Hamburg won in Kiel, that was in the DFB Pokal. They won that game 5-0. Whilst it doesn't seem like we'll see another 5-0 result in terms of a result here, who do you think will get the points in this one? I mean, it's a big game for Hamburg. They want to maintain their top status atop of the Zweite Bundesliga. But for Kiel also, they want to bounce back after that defeat in Bielefeld.
Yeah, this is true. But I think Hamburg will definitely be too strong for them. I think the issue with Hamburg this season has been that they have lost they've drawn to teams in that sort of bottom to middle table. Kiel have the same sort of type as a Wiesbaden team. And Hamburg, whilst they have been imperious against the likes of Stuttgart, they struggle against teams like this. But I think particularly as they drew 1-1 to Wiesbaden, they'll have to come back out. And I think, yeah, I can definitely see Hamburg sneaking over the line with this, perhaps by a couple of goals as well.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Hamburg have had some really good results. I mean, I had a look at the Stuttgart game and they were fantastic. They will have to do it without Martin Harnik. He will miss due to injury. So, that doesn't change much in terms of personnel. He did miss the game against Wiesbaden. So the shoulder does, in terms of goals, will be on Lucas Hinterseer, who has been okay in a Hamburg shirt. He hasn't really lit the goal scoring charts up. It'll be a good opportunity for him to bang in a few goals against an opponent that will give you plenty of opportunities in Kiel. Our last Group 1 game is at the Milan Tor when St. Pauli hosts Bochum. This game is on Friday night. It will be a game of interest to many watching. They've met on 33 previous occasions, 13 wins for St. Pauli, 7 draws for Bochum, 13 draws. The last time they met, it was a nil-all. at the Milan Tour on match day 33. Another big game for both sides, of course. Bochum want to maintain that momentum heading into the international break. St. Pauli winless in their previous four. They want to give their home fans something to cheer about. Gabriel, you're going to be at this game with the Bochum crew. Exciting to obviously go to one of the more renowned stadiums in the Zweite Bundesliga. Do you think VfL could get something out of this game?
Yeah, I think it's massive for Bochum to secure a win. Really, in all honesty, they need to use the momentum that they've been achieved from the win last night at the time of recording to propel themselves to beat a St. Pauli team that have stuttered of late and who Bochum can sort of jump in and leapfrog if they win. And it's it would be testament to the Zweite Bundesliga if Bochum with two wins can find themselves in mid-table, having been sort of in the doldrums at the very bottom of the table for much of the past 10 to 11 weeks. So it's a massive game for both sides. I think with Gamvula returning, it's huge as Bochum's top scorer, but also it is keen to, I'm never going to back St. Pauli in this game, but Bochum are not good away from home. It's really, we struggle away from home. We've only won once in 2019, that away 3-2 away win at Heidenheim away from home. So it's a big game. Everyone at Bochum will of course want to win, but it will be a tough fixture and hotly contested as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked previously on the podcast that our man Jos, the boss, he's under a little bit of pressure to get a result here when it seemed out in the clear. He was after some really good results that have, as you mentioned, Gabriel, stuttered in many ways. I can see this game ending in a draw, in all honesty. But I think we know where the liabilities are for both sides. As we mentioned off-air, Bochum really susceptible to any sort of attacks out wide and balls coming into the danger area. The goal they conceded on the weekend was a testament of a ball coming in from across and Asger Sorensen scoring. So that's their big problem. Just defending any sort of those, they get into a bit of a panic. St. Pauli, it's been just inconsistency. They quite clearly like to play with a lot of possession, but they just don't do enough with it. They're very wasteful in front of goals, and so it might be one of those games that, you know, it'll be hopefully entertaining, but I can't really see either side taking a win here. We'll take our first break from our Match Day 13 preview, and on the other side, we head to the Bremer Brücke when Osnabrück host Stuttgart. Our Group 2 games start with Osnabrück and Stuttgart, the Saturday afternoon kickoff. Both teams coming in different form. Osnabrück, three consecutive draws in their previous five. Stuttgart getting a much-needed win, breaking a three-game losing streak. The two sides have only met on two previous occasions, and they've both been in the DFB Pokal, and they were both in the 1980s. The last time they met was back in 1983, DFB Pokal edition. It was a 2-0 win for VfB. So it's 37 years in the making since this fixture. And yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, you look at Osnabrück looking for their first victory since match day 5, and Stuttgart looking to remain at arm's length with Bielefeld and Hamburg. You look at a team that is so defensively sound like Osnabrück against a team that we expect a lot more attacking wise in Stuttgart. Gabriel, how do you see this one playing out?
I think Stuttgart will win, in all honesty. I think they've struggled, obviously, with the two losses, the three losses, sandwiched in between two wins. But Osnabrück have not looked good. Only scoring 13 goals this season. That's only Sandhausen and Darmstadt have scored fewer. And they concede, although they don't concede that many, they conceded three against Regensburg. And Stuttgart need a win. Stuttgart needs to bounce back. And I think if you just take it on the face of a team that has just come down from the Bundesliga and a team that's just been promoted from the Dritte Liga, the odds are heavily stacked against Osnabrück. It'll be a good game. It might be a slightly defensively sound game as opposed to a very offensive, just purely by the nature of Osnabrück's play. But I think that Stuttgart will scrape by and maybe win like a 2-1 perhaps, or maybe a 1-0.
Yeah, it is the kind of game that we know the Bremer Brucker will be sold out. You have a big club like Stuttgart coming into town, and it certainly drives up interest. But this is a massive game for Osnabrück. You look how tight the table is, as we mentioned, between 8th and 16th is only 3 points. So there is a possibility that if they don't win on the Saturday afternoon, they will be, well, possibly in that bottom three, assuming that Bochum take care of business in at the Milan Tor on Friday night. But yeah, it's a massive game for them. I don't expect them to win, I'm afraid. It's been a tricky inauguration. It was, I think, out of the three promoted sides, them and Wiesbaden were the two sides that we were a bit cautious about. And they're kind of showcasing that, just their inability to score goals consistently. Now, they scored three against Jan on the weekend, but yeah, they're just not getting enough production from their attacking third. We'll move on to Heidenheim, who host Hanover on Sunday. Another game of real importance for the visiting side here, Hanover. They've only met on two previous occasions. Both games have been won by Hanover. They last won the game, it was in Heidenheim, 2-0 back in 2016-17 season. Of course, this will be the first game with Mirko Slomka removed as head coach. It seems as if Asif Saric and Lars Barleman will be co-trainers in the effort to prepare the team for the game on Sunday, and it looks like they'll be in charge. We're still waiting news as who will be the new trainer of Hanover. There is talk that it may be Marcus Anfang, formerly of Köln and Holstein Kiel. Big game, this one, for Hanover. It can't be understated. Another team that's had real issues finding the back of the net. Do you think they can put in a good performance against Heidenheim, or do you think Frank Schmidt will be conjuring up some more classical magic that he does at the home venue?
I think Frank Schmidt is probably the best example that we have, certainly in the Zweite Bundesliga, of just pure consistency in spite of the manner and the nature of how of football and how it works these days. At Heidenheim for a very long time, consistent in his results, always make sure that they're safe and playing attractive football. So I back Heidenheim to, despite Hanover obviously coming off the back of their manager getting sacked and needing a victory. I think Heidenheim at home will probably be enough to put away a spirited Hanover. But I think until Hanover have the manager situation settled, they won't really be able to bounce back in light of Slomka's removal.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And it has the makings of, you know, players who obviously want to impress heading into the international break. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the goalkeeping situation, of course, with Ron Robert Zieler and Mikael Esser. I think Esser just warrants another game. He was pretty good in the 1-0 against Sandhausen. But yeah, I think Heidenheim will win as well. I think they're playing some really good football. They were solid in the draw at Auer. They've had some pretty so-so games at home. I mean, the Bochum game probably comes to mind, where they were sprung early by a very energetic Bochum outfit. But it's a tough place to play at the Voigt Arena, and I expect a Heidenheim win as well. We'll move on to our final Group 2 game. Karlsruhe host Erzgebirge Aue. This game is on Monday nights. Karlsruhe heading in on the back of 6 consecutive draws, as mentioned earlier. Aue have taken 8 points out of a possible 15 in their last 5. They've met on 20 occasions, and on 9 of those, it's been won by
Erzgebirge Aue. The last time they met, ironically, was in the Zweite Bundesliga playoffs back in 2017-18. Aue won 3-1, ensuring that Karlsruhe would be sent to the depths of the Dritte Liga. So maybe some retribution is at play here. But more importantly, from Karlsruhe's perspective, they want to turn those draws into wins. Can they do it?
No, I don't think so, unfortunately. I think their record of having 6 draws is only matched by the draw specialist Bochum. And yes, I think whilst Aue will have, you know, obviously beat Karlsruhe a couple of years ago, and they will, and Karlsruhe will want to exact revenge, I don't think that they'll quite have it in them. I think they will. This will end up in another draw. I think Aue will take a draw as well away from home against a team that are, you know, are doing pretty well, things considered. I think a couple of goals apiece is the, or maybe even just the one, seems to be what will happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take a 1-1 on this one as well. You know, Aue have been really good under Dirk Schuster. It was a signing that, when made in replacement of Daniel Meyer, I was a bit hesitant, being that Dirk had, that Schuster had come from Darmstadt, previously of Darmstadt before being sacked for Dimitrios Gramotsis. Hadn't been a good stint with De Ligt, but he's come at Aue. He's done a really good job. They're actually playing some pretty good attacking football, which is not something you particularly associate with a Dirk Schuster managed side. They've got good weapons with your Holscheids, Kruger, Testrot, Nazarov. So it's evident that they've got the attacking firepower. They've been able to execute quite well. And them sitting in fourth is whilst it probably doesn't seem sustainable long term, they've very much warranted their place in that top five. So I think, I wouldn't be surprised if Karlsruhe nick a goal late to get a point. But, I think a lot of the focus will be on Aue and their attacking play. And I think they will, take another point and, log their top five status heading into the international break. We'll take our final break, as it were. We'll get to our Group 3 games and then we'll get to your topic questions. But to kick us off, it'll be Sandhausen and Greuther Fürth. Sandhausen and Greuther Fürth are the first teams to kick us off in our final group games of match day 13. This game is a Saturday kickoff. Two sides in relatively indifferent form. Sandhausen seeking their first win since match day 5. Greuther Fürth, 2 wins in their previous 3. They've met on 15 previous occasions, and Greuther Fürth have won 7 of those, and Sandhausen 2, the remaining 6 being draws. They last met at this very ground last season, and it ended all square at nil all. It's fair to say that this is one for the purists, and we mean the purest of purists. Do we see any goals in this game or any result that doesn't resemble a nil all?
It's unlikely. I mean, I've already expressed to you off air my intense dislike for anything Sandhausen related. So I hope that if there is going to be a goal, it goes the way of the away side. But I think if there is a goal, there genuinely will be. It genuinely will only go to Greuther Fürth. I think they have bounced back from 3 losses to record, a win against Dynamo, a draw against Osnabrück, and a win against Darmstadt. So I think Sandhausen, again, so goal shy, but then don't concede many either. So it will probably be a 0-0, maybe 1-0 Greuther Fürth.
Yeah, I'd back that. To be fair, Sandhausen have kind of fallen off the cliff after their really impressive start to the season, and I think Fürth signings have really come to the forefront. Hogertz has been quite good. Nielsen in patches. Really supporting Daniel Caterill up the top. They've been stable defensively. I think that they've done quite well with what they have. It almost seems likely, more than likely, to end 0-0, I wouldn't. It probably wouldn't come as much of a surprise if Greuther Fürth were to eke out a 1-0 win. Onwards to Darmstadt as they host Jahn Regensburg. This game is on Sunday. They've met on 25 previous occasions, and this is a fixture that Jahn have had plenty of success in. They've won 14 times against Darmstadt, so that will feel very confident that they could get a result. They last met at the Bellenfeld Tour last season. It ended a goal apiece. Both sides seeking victories, of course. Darmstadt beaten by the aforementioned Greuther Fürth. Jahn Regensburg coughing up a 3-1 lead at home to Osnabrück. It is going to be an interesting fixture, one that I feel that Jahn will believe there are a real chance of getting a win here.
Yes, true. Although Darmstadt are in a decent little purple patch here with two wins in the past three, despite the fact, obviously, that they didn't play too well last week. And I think it will be quite an evenly matched fixture with Darmstadt looking to, at home, maybe put off a little bit of an upset in beating Jahn Regensburg, who have been so impressive this season thus far.
Yeah, I'll back the visitors. I'll go with a not-so-surprising 1 or 2-1 win with at least a Marco Grüttner goal, as he did score back in 2017-18 when they last beat Darmstadt away. He did score the one and only goal in that match. So, yeah, I think Jahn have done everything right this season. They've been... We shouldn't be as surprised as we are, because the two preceding seasons under Achim Bielorza, they finished 10th and 8th. When it was all considered, you look at the team that has one of the smaller budgets in the league, and we expect them to go down. But I think this season we've kind of learnt from that, and they've under Mirsad Salimbegovic, they've been able to thrive again, and undefeated in their previous five fixtures. Two wins and three draws, and easily in a couple of those games they could have won. So they are doing everything right, and I think this is a result that they'll get, and they'll really take that momentum heading into the international break. Our last but certainly not least game of match day 13 is a true 6 points, a bottom of the table fixture, Dynamo Dresden and Vian Wiesbaden on Friday night. This game, the significance is massive. It's certainly not lost on both sides. Dresden, of course, have lost their last five games. Wiesbaden unbeaten, although the previous three fixtures have ended in draws. We look at the head-to-head. They've met on 8 occasions. Dresden have won 5 of those. Wiesbaden only once. And the last time they met was in Dritte Liga play back in the 2015-16 season. That was a 4-0 win for Dynamo. It can't be understated how important the result is for Dynamo to win. Otherwise, it may seem that Christian Fiel may be on the outer. Gabriel, Wiesbaden have turned it around defensively, and they might feel that an away win is very possible here.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't lost in September, which, to be there, considering that they were pretty much hammered by everyone that played them for the first six or seven weeks of the season, is really impressive. I mean, I remember when they came to Bochum and they pulled away with a 3-0 3-0 halftime lead, and we were almost shocked because it seemed a gimme for Bochum. And though we pulled it back to 3-0, it was a real culture shock for us. I think this will be an exciting game because Dynamo need to win, because otherwise they're going to be cut adrift a bit. If Wiesbaden win, then feasibly they could be 4 points away from even getting off. So it's a big game. I can see lots of goals. I'm going to go controversially for a 4-3 win to Wiesbaden.
I love
and
it.
Christian Fiel's last game.
Yeah, I maybe won't be so lavish on the goals, but I see Wiesbaden winning this game and agreeing with you that Fiel will be on the out at the end of this, and we don't like to see anyone lose their jobs, but unfortunately this is a result driven business, and when you lose 5 consecutive games in the manner that they have, especially for a club that has ambitions like Dynamo, not particularly good, and you don't want to lose to a team like Wiesbaden, who have improved mightily defensively in the past 5 weeks, from that team that gave up 23 in their opening seven outings. So, yeah, I think Wiesbaden have come a long way, and I think they'll get the points here, and they'll keep Bochum and Osnabrück and Darmstadt very honest, but Dresden compounded to the bottom of the table. That's our preview for match day 13. Now to the topic questions. There is plenty to get through, but there are a lot of good questions, so we're excited to get through them. We'll start with Danny at KDanny41. This is clearly a baiting question, so it'll be interesting to see what our answers will be. He asked, who is Franconia's number one team? Gabriel, since you are a first-time guest here, why don't you kick us off? Who is Franconia's number one team?
Flensburg Kickers, isn't it? I think, isn't it? It must be.
I always thought it was Schweinfurt, Nordfundfurt, to be honest. Big club. See, this is what happens when you bait, Danny. And I know you're a Vikings fan, so I'll let you off. But at the moment, if we look at the table periodically, it is Greuther Fürth. However, many things can change. I would say that Nürnberg will be the top dog if they were to win that Franconian derby, which is a few weeks away. So, just watch out. So, so it was all good fun and games, but they've warranted the title at the moment. The question is, will they be holding it temporarily? Our second question is from Colin Moore at CJ Moore 96. He asks, when will the anti-Florian Harthurst agenda end? And never. Just kidding. When he plays well, out of the team that Uwe Neuhaus puts out, he seems to me to be the most. He just seems like a liability. He's quite slow at that position where you need a lot of pace tracking back. He gets caught out of position. And if you read my piece on our Bielefeld and Hamburg game, you'll see exactly what we're talking about in terms of his positional play defensively. He gets caught out quite often. And as a result, it's teams that are more able to attack that particular wing. I think watching Anderson Lukoki play in the cup game against Schalke, it showed that maybe he should play him, but managers have their favourites. I know with any Schalke fan will tell you that for some reason, David Wagner loves Guido Burgstaller, and Guido Burgstaller just cannot score for the sake of him. So, the free Katuchu movement is real, and that's why he should be playing. But it's probably something you're not too familiar with in terms of Florian Harthurst, Gabriel. I guess I'll word it in a different way. Do you think he is someone that should be benched for Lukoki, or do you think if you're an opposition side, you'd be more than happy to see Harthurst line up?
Yeah, I think when we play Bielefeld in the reverse fixture, I think we'll probably want him because Lukoki is definitely the quicker of the two players. And when Bochum play Bielefeld, I think we'll, as we normally do, we'll concentrate a lot of effort out wide. With Danny Blum and with either Chung Yung Lee or another on the other side. And I think I don't have too much against him, if I'm honest, but not as opinionated about him as you are, I guess.
I blame Eva. she's itching in that Ostwestfalen, which is it's fine, but I see that Colin has a Fortuna Düsseldorf shirt in his Twitter DP. So I would say you'd want Lukoki to play because Lukoki's on loan from Fortuna Düsseldorf. So, that will be the end response for that. Let's move on. Our next question is from Phil, not Al Phil, at tweets underscore by underscore Phil. Interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, not bad. Are Arminia Bielefeld for real this season, or just a couple of injuries away from slipping down the league? Gabriel, what do you think?
I think that they are pretty well positioned to, even if they do suffer a few injuries and struggle a bit in the middle part of the season, I think they'll still end up pretty high. I think they have exceeded expectations so far this season. They're doing fantastically well, only 7 goals difference away from being top of the table 12 weeks into November, which is really impressive. I think the issue is that their strikers, the two Foxhammer and Claude, take up 63% of the goals. I think if both of them got injured, or if one of them got injured, then that would be quite problematic, considering Bielefeld rely on, I mean, they scored 24 goals this season. They are very goal hungry, and if that were to dry up, I'm not sure that they would be able to replicate the form that they have done. But I think they are a good enough team to push for the promotion, certainly the promotion playoff place. And I like the look of them. I think Borkum are rivals, but I have a lot of respect for Bielefeld.
Yeah, they're for real. They are the real deal. And whilst I agree with Gabriel's concerns that if one or both of them were to go down, would they have the infrastructure in place to find goals? You probably want to see more out of the likes of Hartu and Yabo and Edmundsson. But they've been for real since Neuhaus took over, and they've been a fantastic team to watch. They play good football. I
think we'll see them in the Bundesliga next year.
Yeah, I think it's a genuine chance. I mean, at the start of the season, I had them finishing fourth, as but they were it was intentional. They were a smoky for a reason, and they've only just gone and they continue to justify that. So it will be interesting to see how it carries on. I know we're only 12 match days in, but we are a third of the season in already, and they're in a really good position to at the very least make the playoffs and challenge a team like maybe an Union Berlin or a Mainz or an Augsburg. So I mean, they're in a good position. Our next question is from Steel Penguin at Steel Penguin 3. It says, hello, everybody. What do y'all think of VAR in the Zweite Bundesliga this season? Now, this is something we spoke about off-air, Gabriel. And our points are pretty similar. I'll start with you then. I'll let you kick proceedings off. Being that you've been at the grounds when VAR's been used, how do you think it's gone so far?
Yeah, I think it's okay, all things considered. There are fundamental technological issues, technology issues with VAR in the Zweite Bundesliga, merely because they just don't have enough money for it. I think there's also the caveat of, in truth, the refereeing is just not as good in the Zweite Bundesliga as it is in Europe's top leagues, where they also use VAR. So you have incidents where, for example, last night against Nuremberg, there was a VAR decision that took all of 3 minutes to make, which was quite, I think a lot of people could see it on the monitors that it was quite a clear decision, but there is still the delays. It's still against in the Hannover Sandhausen game, there's a fundamental flaw in the fact that the camera can't cover all the players, which is really, really now and abysmal. But it overturned the red card decision in the game. I can't remember exactly which game it is, but on the weekend in the Wiesbaden Heisfeld game. So I think it's better than not having it. Yeah,
I agree. It is better than not having it. However, yeah, it's the monetary limitations that have created sort of the imbalance in the performance of the actual technology. That and the standard of refereeing, and for some reason, I still feel as if those using VAR still, they create the self-human error where they create their own interpretations on certain aspects. They need to be more cut and dry on certain decisions, like handball in the box, for example, which for some reason is the most inconsistently ruled thing we've seen, where sometimes it's given a penalty or it's completely mugged off, and just needs a black and white interpretation, please.
I think it's interesting as well that or rather, a big issue of VAR is that obviously it's manned by someone in Cologne that is obviously a human being, and the human beings change week on week. So, for example, in the Karlsruhe game at Bochum, we had the referee go to the VAR monitor twice or three times. But in the game last night against Nuremberg, the referee only took advice from his earpiece and never went over to the monitor. And it's that sort of discrepancy where you kind of then start to feel a little bit disenchanted with VAR. Either always go to the monitor, or always stand in the middle of the pitch and hold your ear for 3 minutes, and then make a decision based on someone else's call. But you can't really have it where it's kind of consistently inconsistent. And that's the issue with something that should be a lot more cut and dry than before.
Amen. We'll move on to our fifth question from Dave at DBless16. Will Hartesville stop conceding on set pieces? This seems like a pretty easy answer. No, they just won't. I'm sorry, but they just won't. It is literally, you know, a guarantee, you know, death, taxes, and Hartesville conceding from set pieces. Guaranteed. It happens. So it's a great question, but real simple answer. This one's for you, Gabriel, because this is the best question for last for the man in Bochum, of course. This is from our great mate, Abel Mazaros at Bundes PL. If you don't get his Bundesliga newsletter, you should. Fantastic read, real tactical dive on everything in the Bundesliga. You get special podcasts if you subscribe to his service. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee you it is something you should go and check out. He asks, is it too late to ask why Danny Blum is playing like a football god? The stats say 5 goals, 5 assists, a goal every 173 minutes. He really has been a fantastic signing for Bochum this season.
Yeah, I mean, only £225,000 from Frankfurt. It's a good signing at a decent monetary value. He's been good. He's contributed to a lot of goals. A lot of the time as well. He's very involved, but without actually contributing to either an assist or a goal. And I mean, he's been. I don't really know where we'd be without him on the left-hand side. And I think it was interesting because last night there was a protest against the CEO at Bochum. Willis, there's a big sign saying a big banner saying Willis Raus, purely because he's not been because there's not been a lot of money spent or not a lot of, not money spent wisely at Bochum. Danny Blum has been a wise signing for not that much money. He will probably he's 28, so he's in his prime, and he's playing like it, and we're all very thankful to be having him. So it's helpful that we use him for everything. He takes corners. He takes free kicks. Sometimes, if Onvula doesn't take a penalty, it doesn't take penalties. It's him. So he is very much becoming a talismanic figure at Bochum. But we'll need him in the coming weeks because although our form is good of late, we've drawn too many games and we need players like him coming up with goals and assists.
Yeah, his interplay with Danilo Suarez on the left-hand side has been really good as they create a lot of overlaps. They cover each other. Both lethal left footers. He's been very good. And he's in the conversation as a Zweiter Bundesliga football god. He has risen quite quickly and his players really showed that. And he was very good last night, of course, providing the error to the second goal and then the assist for the third. That's all the time we have for this edition of the Zweiter Bundesliga podcast. A little bit of a long one, but well worth it. Gabriel, thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been great.
It's an absolute pleasure. And of course, if you don't follow the VfL Bochum English Twitter feed, you should. It seems like we might have a bit of a good little friendship with our good friends at Bochum. No bias, of course. Being a Schalke fan, so obviously no bias, but do follow them, and of course follow the other English-based Twitter feeds, your Hamburgs, and of course Darmstadt, relatively new to the scene. We thank you once again, and until next time, we hope you have a good weekend. Goodbye.